Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our, well, I guess we'll say monthly, vigorous, relentless, and on occasion ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you all. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. You can reach the studio here, 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. Getting a late start tonight. It's 10:15 here Central Time. Given that most of our listeners listen to the podcast, I don't expect any live calls tonight. But if we get someone tuning in, that'd be great. You can also interact with the show by using the MeWe platform, MeWe.com/P/WellArmedRadio. We'll get you to the Well Armed Radio page on MeWe where you can comment on the show thread for tonight, and I'll see that and reply. You can also, if you're listening to podcast and have something you'd like to discuss, feel free to shoot me an email, and that's Nick at WisconsinCarry.org. Speaking of which, I've got an email here. Now I'm going back in time. And I think I've got an email from one of our members. I got to go back and find it here. Yep, got it. No, wait. I'll have to double check. I thought we had an email from one of our regular listeners in Madison, Tom. And then, Tom, if I've missed your email, I apologize because I think you sent me an email with a couple topics and now I'm not finding it. So I do apologize if I've overlooked that. But you can email me, nick@wisconsincarry.org, and I'll get that and perhaps use some of that if you have a question, comment, topic. You're more than welcome to share or anything you'd like to react to with tonight's show. So with that said, we'll jump right into it and start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And, you know, so here we are, late April, Wisconsin weather, and I always start the show with just a quick small talk-ish stuff about personal-ish kind of things. You know, I love beating the weather here in Wisconsin. I mean, we had 80s, 70s and 80s a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half, I forget, it was a week ago, week and a half ago anyway. And, you know, when you get that kind of weather this time of year, not unusual. I mean, we've had 80s in March even before, but certainly not a regular occurrence. But you get that nice weather early in the year and you think to yourself, okay, I mean, it's not going to be 70/80 every day from now until summer. But, you know, if we're hitting 70s and 80s, then all right, you know, we've got margin for error. I mean, we can slip back down to the 60s and that's still great weather. But no, this is Wisconsin. And I've come to the conclusion that when you look at those average daily highs, that's really, so there's, you know, there's different, if remember from high school math or whatever, I probably wasn't high school math, it was probably junior high math. But there's different, maybe it was even elementary school, but there's different kinds of averages. There's the, there's one is the mean, the mode, the median. And now I'm going to probably forget which is which, but like, I think the mean average is you take a bunch of things, add them up and divide it by the number of those things. And that gives you the average. It's a mathematical average. Then there's the mode average, and the mode is, I believe, again, if there's a, my brother's a math teacher, and he listens to the show. He's probably going to correct me if I get this wrong, but the mode average, this has got to be stuff I'm remembering from junior high. The mode is an average calculated by what's the most frequent occurrence. So if you have five different values between 1 and 10. You've got 2, 3, 7, and 10. Then 7 would be your mode average because 7 occurs twice and all the others only occur once. Pretty sure that's right with the mode. And then your median average would be if you have 10 numbers between 1 and, let's say you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, your median average would be the number that falls, whichever number falls in the middle, which would be 4. Because out of 10 numbers, 4, or actually I guess it would be 4, so now I'm going to confuse myself, but out of the 10 numbers, see 10, there wouldn't be numbers. So let's say 11 numbers. Let's say there was 3 ones, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, no 5, and then 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 11 numbers. The middle number would be 4, so your average would be 4. So those are different kinds of averages. And so in Wisconsin, when they talk about the average daily high, I think that's definitely a mathematical average. And I say that because it's far from a mode, meaning you could expect the, if it was the mode, that would be the most common temperature occurrence on that day. So if the average high for April 1st is, I don't know what it is, 45 degrees, you would expect it to be 45 degrees most of the time slash more than any other temperature. But what I've come to realize in Wisconsin is that our averages are all made up of extremes, especially the fringe season. So when your average daily high in April is 45, that's a bunch of 60s and a bunch of 20s. That's and very, very rarely is it like the mode average, like the most frequent number would be 45. Occasionally we are the average high, but it seems like the majority of that quote average is made up of extremes. And by extremes, one year it's 60 on April 1st, the next year it's 40 on April 1st or 35. The next year it's 40 and 55 and just so on and so forth. It's just very rarely, because if you look at the average temperature, average daily highs for Wisconsin for the particular days, you'd think we've got like 6 months of nice weather. Well, anybody who lives here knows we have 3 months of nice, reliably nice weather. And then all the other time it's 50-50 proposition at best. And because even once you get to, I don't have it in front of me, but I think once you get to May, average daily high is like 60 something. It's a really nice daily high. I mean, if it was 60 most days, 60 and sunny, that's a nice day. Well, it's not. It's 71 day, 50 the next, 75 one day, 45 the next, even in May. I mean, that's what it ends up being here. So anyway, you know, it'd be nice if after a couple of weeks ago, we get the 80s and the 70s and then, okay, we've got margin for error. We'll slide back into the 60s. No, we're back. And I mean, today the high, I played golf today, rode my bike first, played golf. The high was, I think it was 41 was the highest I saw on my thermometer. So I go out for a bike ride, you know, bike ride's easy. You're pedaling, sweating, you know, you get warmed up, but, you know, just not going to let the weather win. I'm going to go out and get my bike ride, even though it was only 41 degrees. And then after that, I mean, this time of year, I've started playing golf and I want to play golf on Sundays. So I was like, you know what? Last year, at the end of last season, I bought a cover for a golf cart. These are more popular in the South where they get like these quick outbursts of rain. But up here, I use it, you know, people use them for warmth. So you got these covers you can throw over a golf cart. You can buy them. I forget how much it is. It was $300 or $400, $500. I really don't remember. I bought it last fall. Didn't use it last fall. And then the weather started off decent. I mean, I've already played golf in like 70s plus high 70 degree weather a couple weeks ago at Nagawaki Golf Course. And I was like, oh, there you go. I mean, I bought that cover to enclose a golf cart. I didn't even need it. I mean, it's, you know, got the clear see-through windows and then the canvas and a zipper down the sides to enclose it. Well, today was my day. 41 degrees when I went and took my bike ride. And that's my first I never want to let the weather win. I want to be able to do what I want to do and not let the weather get in my way. That's one thing I like about hiking season, because with hiking season, the weather never wins, almost never wins. If it's below zero, we can hike. If it's snowing, we can hike. Downpour rain is kind of the only time that the weather wins. We don't really get too much of that, but it can happen. So I like to always be able to overcome the weather, because here in Wisconsin, you got to do that because we get shit weather half the time. And so, yeah, today I went out and played golf, put that cover on, worked like a charm. I also have a little propane golf cart heater that I actually bought. It fits in the cup holder of a golf cart and it like has this little thing. It wedges in pretty tight. I bought it for potentially to use on a golf cart, but more likely to use for my fiance when I bought these kayaks, and the kayaks have like a little cup holder on them. They're molded kayaks, sit-in kayaks. And I thought if we're out paddling in the fringe seas with my fiance, because my goal in life is to keep my fiance warm. Like she's a great sport. She goes hiking with me all the time, all winter long, no matter the weather. It's just pretty good when we're out moving, but as soon as we stop, as soon as the hike's over, we're back to the truck and we're tailgating or trailgating, as we call it. She's cold within like 3 minutes. So, propane heaters and heated jackets. And I mean, you name it, I bought it for her. Cause, my goal in life is to keep, her name's Kim, to keep Kim warm. But, so I bought this propane heater. And the nice thing about the golf cart heater is that you can jostle around pretty good. Like if you've got a big buddy, little buddy heater, those things are so sensitive. You jostle them, you move them, and boom, they shut up. There's a safety mechanism, shuts them off. But this golf cart heater, I'm in the golf cart. It's 38, 37 degrees outside the golf cart. And inside my little golf cart with the enclosure, it's like 75. I mean, it depends. When you're moving along, it didn't quite seal up along the bottom because every golf cart, there's Yamaha golf carts, EasyGo golf carts. I mean, there's just different club car. There's different brands of golf carts, and they aren't all shaped the same. The roofs, depending on the year, you know, older cars, they might have a smaller roof. Newer ones might have a little bit more of an extended roof. Anyway, they aren't all one size fits all. So you're not going to buy five different cart covers. So I ended up I bought one that I thought would fit the type of carts that the places that I golf at use. And so, but it leaves about 6 inches, like down by where your feet are with a golf cart, it's 6 inches open air. So when you're moving along, some wind will blow in there, but the top two thirds seals really well. And, you know, heat rises. So it's got a pretty nice halo heat effect in there. So, I mean, I was damn comfy. And I'm like, this is the way to golf in shitty weather, cold weather. So, I mean, it was 37, 38 degrees. And I was toasty warm inside that. I didn't even have to bundle up. I just wore a pair of, you know, pants, Duluth Trading Company. They're it's not denim, but whatever they call it, they're fire hose flex pants, and a t-shirt, and then a long sleeve t-shirt and a vest. And I was comfy. I mean, you get out, if you're only stepping out of the cart for 30 seconds to swing a shot, then you get back in, zip it back down, drive to your next one. And driving is when you get the most cold when you're golfing in the golf cart, because you're not moving, you're not out, you know, walking around, keeping up body heat. And then you get the wind chill of driving through the wind at whatever speed golf carts go. And 15 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour. They're not very fast, but so yeah, that was beating the weather number two today. So I played 18, actually played 20 holes, 21 holes, wanted to play a little bit more, but, it worked out pretty well. So I was pretty pleased with I don't want to call it, I didn't have to like MacGyver anything together because these things are made for this purpose, but arrangements that I made to keep myself warm golfing. So yeah, I love beating the weather in Wisconsin. And I don't know, I think that's kind of to tie it into like, I think that conservative, freedom-minded, Second Amendment-loving people, I mean, Second Amendment-loving people are this, they want to be prepared for anything. They want to be able to handle anything. And I just feel like that's the kind of thing, I shared this topic because I just feel like it's the kind of thing that other people, gun owners are kind of in that similar mindset. Of course, a lot of gun owners make fun of golf, but which I think is unfortunate because I think most gun owners would love golf. The nice thing, think about shooting firearms is a firearm is, there's a precision aspect of it. And obviously the firearm itself, there's the power aspect of it. I mean, a firearm is a very powerful machine, a very powerful tool. And that also, but it also requires precision. Golf is like that. There's power. You know, when you're driving, when you're hitting the golf ball, there's power, but there's also precision. I mean, your target is I think a golf hole is, don't quote me on this. I think it's 4 inches wide, the cup for a golf ball. So you're starting off and then your target is something 500 yards away on a par five ish and, 4 inches wide. I mean, that's requires precision, and it does feel like, you know, when you're target shooting a gun, especially distance shooting, golf feels the same way. You learn to aim, you have to control your breathing, you have to relax, you have to not tense up. You know, if you tense up when you're shooting, you get those errors like the too hard of a trigger pull, anticipating the recoil, you know, anticipating the discharge. There is actually a lot of similarities with golf, even though a lot of my friends, Don and Economowoc, like to make fun. What is the saying that a golf course is a perfectly good waste of a good rifle range or something like that? But yeah, I think a lot of golf or a lot of gun folks that don't golf might actually appreciate the concept better than they think they would, because it is that power and precision, just like shooting a firearm. There's the power and there's also the precision, the target acquisition and you know, your setup, your stance, your grip, and then execution. It just, I feel like there's a lot of similarities. But the second thing I was going to talk about today was Live Golf. I don't know if you guys watch Live Golf. See, now I'm on the golf thing. And if you don't golf and you don't watch, you know, you're like, what the fuck, Nick, let's talk about guns. But I just got to give a shout out for Live Golf. It's on this year. There used to be just on YouTube. You could watch it. Live Golf is a new upstart tour. Supposedly it's backed by the Saudis, like some investment firm in the Saudis. And then there's all this controversy because, the Saudis and their human rights violations. I mean, honestly, like at this point, the United States has no business talking about any other country and their human rights violations. I mean, good grief. We've got people, January 6th detainees that were held without bail. And I don't know if I can use the word tortured, but cruel and unusual punishment, I think, is fair. We've got the Department of Justice, the weaponization of federal agencies like a banana republic. So, you know, the United States can no longer sit here high and mighty on the moral high ground and throw shade on any other country. And again, I'm not endorsing whatever goes on in Saudi Arabia and what they do or don't do with the way they punish people or discriminate against people or whatever. But again, the United States, I think, unfortunately, in the last several years has gotten to a point where we ain't got no business throwing stones around glass houses. But what I love about the Live Golf Tour is the PGA Tour is a monopoly. And the PGA Tour, you know, a lot of the PGA events, they have like a local charity. So whether it's the St. Jude Classic or whatever. Now, some of these charities I think are better than others, like St. Jude, I think, is a children's hospital. But with that said, charity in this country is a pretty damn big scam in most circumstances. Charities are where they take people, solicit money out of the goodness of people's heart, and then pay themselves, you know, mid six figures. We're talking, you know, $500,000 a year or whatever in a salary to be the manager of or the CEO of, you name it, Wounded Warriors or Disabled American Veterans or some. I mean, these charities have a whole bunch of people, staffers that are extremely well paid, and that's where a lot of money goes. And some of them are better than others at where the money ends up. And I don't know if it's an agency or some watchdog group that rates charities based on how much of the money goes to the actual cause doing the work versus administrative costs and things like that. But all this charity stuff, like Children's Hospital in Wisconsin, oh, it's a charity. Yeah, I mean, the Children's Hospital in Wisconsin, like, there is so much woke bullshit going on with all that stuff and so many ways in which they these charities aren't really charities. It's just – so a lot of these PGA events that are different around the country and each one has, like, their local charity partner – you know how that is. It's some local charity partner that you're holding a PGA event and taking the money and under the guise of charity and the tax write-off that comes with it, donating money to this charity. But then that ends up the big wigs that are on the board of the charity and the executives that run the charity, the administrators that run the charity, they're all making big money off it. It's, I don't want to call it a scam, but I think if people knew, and some of this, like, I'm just hypothesizing because I don't sit here and look at the books of all these charities, but I know how this stuff works. And so this is my suspicion / working theory that a lot of these charities, they siphon millions of dollars from every PGA event to go to these quote charities. And a lot of that money just goes to making the board members and the charity executives wealthy. And it's the big rich boy network. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. We hold these events and then the money all, and it all comes around and they all keep them, the the in circle. And again, that's just my impression. And in the, on the PGA Tour, so now I'm no fan of the NBA, NFL, whatever, but you take the NBA, the NFL, anybody who makes the team, you know, you got the quarterback that's making $30 million a year, but you got the linemen, and I don't know what the league minimum is, but like you got the linemen, they're making $1 million a year. So even the people that make the league minimum in the NFL and the NBA, they're rich, they're wealthy. On the PGA Tour, the people that are making the people that are on the PGA Tour, but they're not, you know, winning, they're not the superstars, they don't have the endorsements, they don't have some of them are struggling to make it. Like, I mean, I've even heard stories in the past, I don't know if there's anybody currently, but PGA players that are living out of their car. I mean, that's how bad it is for some of these people on the PGA Tour. And that's where some of these players, and even the players that do reasonably well, you know, you win a tournament here or there, they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but, you know, not millions. And then you've obviously got the superstars like Tiger Woods. Their endorsement deals, well, now Tiger doesn't win anything anymore, but it's been a few years, and of course, with all his injuries and Carson's and whatever surgeries. But even when Tiger was winning tournaments, even the years where he won the most tournaments, his endorsements dwarfed his tour earnings. So he didn't even need the money from the actual tour winnings to be mega wealthy. It didn't hurt. Obviously, it was more money in the bank. But that's what the beef that some of these people that with the PGA Tour is, that the PGA Tour vastly underpays its athletes. And some people might scoff at the athletes. They are athletes, but vastly, in my opinion, vastly underpays the players. And a lot of the money gets siphoned off and, again, sent to these, quote, charities where, you know, you and I both know it's just going to the old big boys network, and some of it actually does get into an actual charitable cause. But the rest of it is probably going to a lot of high-paid executives that operate these charities in the various places. And it's, you know, you scratch my back and I scratch yours, and we get a big tax write-off for these charitable donations and this charitable work, and we look like magnanimous and altruistic. And this upstart LIV Golf Tour, they've been able to lure a lot of PGA Tour players away because of this frustration with the PGA Tour. There's other frustrations as well with the PGA Tour, the amount of events that they require tour players to play. And again, I haven't dug into the whole drama, the whole thing. But anyway, I'm a capitalist. I love competition. I love free markets. And I love to see people taking on the old stodgy legacy, whatever, whether it's the legacy leagues. I would love for one of the upstart football leagues to get a foothold onto the NFL, but they really haven't. But I'd love to see it. But LIV Golf is one where, because of the money they had to back it from the Saudi government, where they've just got incredible wealth over there from oil and whatever. This LIV Golf Tour is so well funded that it can self-fund for a while. And now I think it's their second year. Last year, they had a bunch of tournaments, some in the United States. And so the players that went to play for the LIV Golf, because they wanted good players. They wanted superstar names like Bryson DeChambeau and Phil Mickelson and Brooks Koepka. And I think it's Dustin Johnson. But I always get Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas and these guys confused, but I think it's Dustin Johnson that went to. So some of the best players in the world have gone to the LIV Golf Tour. And then there's this big, the PGA won't let them play PGA Tour events. And then, you know, the Masters did let everybody play, which was awesome. And the LIV Tour players did very, very well. I think the British Open, which is just called the Open Championship, I think they let anybody play. The US Open, I can't remember if that's been determined yet, because the U.S. Open is not a PGA event. It's a USGA event. So anyway, I'm a big fan of the LIV Golf Tour and the LIV Golf League. And they're doing some innovative things with teams, and it makes for more interesting watching. Some of the visual is a little bit different. You're not used to the music playing in the background and stuff, but I think they're targeting that towards a younger audience. But the cool thing, I mean, they just, like today, or I guess it was yesterday or late. See, this current tournament, I think, is being played in Australia, which is a totally different time zone. So I don't know what was live and what was recorded, or maybe it was all recorded. But they've got one of the holes, I think it was the 17th, they call it the watering hole, where it kind of reminds you if you've ever seen the Phoenix Open. This, I think, I don't know if it's the 17th there or what hole it is, but they got stadium seating kind of-ish set up all around this par three. And whenever there's a hole-in-one, everybody goes nuts and throws their beer bottles and cups and everything into the onto the this hole. And it just – so Brooks Koepka, Chase Koepka, Brooks Koepka's brother, he gets a hole-in-one, again, late last night or early this morning or something. And it was just a cool scene. The crowd goes nuts. And see, usually at golf, it's like, you know, you're very quiet until after the person swings. And after the person swings, and, oh, you're the man, and blah, blah. But with LIV Golf, on most holes, they're quiet. But this 17th hole, the watering hole, while the golfers are getting ready to swing, they're addressing the ball at the tee up, the crowd's going, oh. And then as they start to take their backswing, they go, oh, as soon as you make contact, oh. And then it kind of gets quiet as they're waiting to see how this ball going to be close or whatever. And then once you see it land, because when the ball is in the air, you can't tell if it's on target, not on target, where is it going to. And then once the ball lands and you say, oh, it's close, it's rolling towards the hole, then the crescendo of the crowd roar starts to grow, and then it goes in. And the crowd just goes nuts. You know, Brooks Koepka's chest bumping, the caddies and the other guys up there, and then the crowd is people are throwing their drinks and beers and cups of whatever onto the golf hole, and they're showing this from one end, the video camera from like the green towards the tee, and it's like just this, it looks like someone turned on 50 sprinklers across the hole with all this water getting sprayed from cups getting thrown, and it just, then they have to clean all these, it's a super cool scene. Just if you get a chance. This year it's on network. It's on CW18, so you can watch it on regular TV. And I just love it. The nice thing about the LIV Golf Tour for the players is they don't play every single week, so you're not required. So these guys can play a round, a competitive round, and then I think they have a couple weeks off. I don't know if it's once a month they have a tournament for LIV, or if it's, you know, every 3 weeks or something, but it just allows the guys to have a little bit of a home life, because the PGA Tour is a long season. And, you know, it just gives these guys a chance to play competitive professional golf, make a lot of money, and then go home to their family for, you know, a week or two and, you know, practice, stay sharp in their game and do other things and then be back for the tournaments. And because it's funded by the Saudis at this point, they're actually paid more just to be on the LIV Tour than they would on the PGA Tour, even if they were to win a few events or something like that. So anyway, it's super cool. All right, keep running through here. Supreme Court results. Of course, Dan Kelly lost. I was totally not surprised. We were kind of rope-a-dope when in the last week or two, everybody was saying on talk radio, oh, it's really close. It's a neck-and-neck race. I mean, Dan Kelly has closed the gap. I think he ran a terrible race. He never fought back. But here's the big thing. You know, I think you can blame the race as much on the Wisconsin legislature as you can on Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly is a stud of a justice, not a good campaigner. Of course, the media was totally in the tank for Protasiewicz, and she was a horrible candidate. I mean, she is reported to be a frequent user of the N-word, and they suppressed that story and beat up her elderly husband, who is elder abuse, validated accusations or validated charges, and the media suppressed that, and some racist type rulings where there's a grandmother and she didn't want to have, or she wanted to adopt her kids. I think the mother had died and wanted to adopt her grandkids, and Protasiewicz ruled against her, said no, gave it to a white lady who had a bigger house. And then the grandmother went and bought a bigger house so that she could get her grandkids. And then Jana Protasiewicz still said something like, oh, they'll have a better life with this lady or something. It was just the kind of thing that would typically alienate black inner city voters. And the media just totally suppressed it. So there was a whole bunch of reasons why Dan Kelly lost. It wasn't a fair fight. There was more money that Dan Kelly, that Protasiewicz had than others. But also, I think a big, you know, 10 points of it was, it's abortion, stupid. I mean, how many elections and how many of our rights are we going to lose to Republicans who want to push their moral position on abortion as a legal standard? And I say this as someone who thinks that abortion, again, it's above my pay grade, but I think if God was standing here, he'd probably say, yeah, abortion is a sin. It's wrong. But that's my religious belief. And we don't make laws based upon religious beliefs. And people say, oh, we're a faith-based society and blah, blah, blah. You know, there are parallels. But like the Ten Commandments isn't the Constitution. I mean, thou shalt not commit adultery. I mean, it's not it's not illegal to cheat on your girlfriend. It's not illegal to cheat on your wife. And some people say, oh, in some states, still look, if those old legacy laws are in the books, they're never enforced. But so, and we wouldn't want it to be. I don't want it to be illegal to cheat on your wife. I think it's morally wrong to cheat on your wife, but I don't want it to be illegal. I think it's wrong to lie to people, but I don't want, you know, lying to someone to be a crime. I mean, we're all sinners. We sin every day. And again, that's my religious belief. But so we do bad things every day. And I don't want each of those to be a crime because we'd all be in jail. If lying was a crime, I mean, lying's wrong, but if lying's a crime, and sometimes it is, you know, when you lie on a contract or you lie and get someone to buy something, but if I tell someone, I got a hole in one today. Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations. Let me buy you a beer. And that's a lie. I mean, that's not illegal. Immoral, perhaps, sure, but we don't want that to be illegal. So again, but I think there's a problem a lot of Republicans have is that they're so interested in pushing their religious / moral beliefs as law that, again, I'll say, how many elections and how many of our rights are we going to lose to Republicans who want to push their moral position as a legal standard? And I think, you know, there's Republicans who say, oh, no, we stick with the complete ban and, you know, and then we need to just fight on these other issues and fight because we can win on crime. We don't have to give in on abortion. We can win on crime. And here's the thing, though. 70% of people, I think, I've never done a poll, but I just this anecdotally, because even conservative friends of mine, 70% of, let me restate my opinion first. I believe that abortion is probably morally wrong from the moment of conception. I think it should be legally wrong from the point of viability. And my reason for that is because I've said this before on the show, but if anybody new is listening, when you're 2 years old, you don't have the right to keep and bear arms. When you're 5 years old, you don't have the right to drive. When you're 7 years old, you don't have the right to sign contracts. All those rights are held by your parents because you're a minor. Your parents are the custodian of your rights. Your parents' decisions would trump your decisions. If a four-year-old said they wanted to be emancipated from their parents and there was no violence, there was no abuse, there was nothing, that would not happen. The parents' rights govern their kids' rights. Kids' rights exist through their parents. Not all rights, because certainly if you're 5 years old, you have the right to life. If you're 5 years old, you have the right to self-defense. But you don't get the right to keep and bear arms until, you know, 18-ish. I mean, you know, sliding standard, you can hunt less than that. But, I mean, you don't get the right to drive until 16. You don't get the right to sign contracts until 18. So we already have precedent in this country that minors don't – you don't get your full slate of rights the moment you exist as a human being. So now this is my position. Furthermore, women who – are pregnant, you know, women have rights as well. And if that fetus / baby is not viable outside of the womb, then that fetus couldn't exist without the mother. And I believe that's enough of a legal standard to say that a woman has a right to terminate her pregnancy up until the point of viability. So when the fetus could live without the mother, meaning you could do a C-section and, then that baby. Now, what exactly is that? I mean, it varies because some babies are born, some babies are born 2 months premature, I think, and they live, and some babies are born 2 months premature and they die. That might be too, maybe it's like 3 months premature and they live, but some babies are born 3 months premature and they die. So, I mean, viability isn't a perfectly defined thing. I mean, it depends on health of the mother, the nutrition of the mother, probably maybe genetics, you know, a whole bunch of things just fall into when a baby is viable. I don't think there is a single point in time. So, you know, pick an approximate date when I'd say if it's 16 weeks. And that's what the law should be. Not, and it can still be morally wrong, and Republicans can still sit there and say it's baby killing if you have an abortion. That's all fine. But the legal standard, I think, should be viability. And that comes as someone who thinks that from conception, if you terminate a baby after conception, I think if God was standing here, he'd say that was a sin, that's a moral transgression. But that's my religious belief / theory. I'm not God. I don't know. And I'm not even 100% sure how or what God exists. I mean, but I'm now convinced that there is a God, because like this whole world and how it works and the laws of nature and all that stuff, I mean, that's just too well done. That there has to be some intelligent human God-like person that created all that. But I still don't know. There's more that I don't know than I do. So, I mean, that's what faith is. Faith is choosing to believe in something you don't have proof of. So if you had proof, it wouldn't be faith. If God like came down from the clouds today while I was on the golf course and said, "Hey, Nick, I'm real. You know, healed my shoulder. I got a sore shoulder, healed my shoulder and, made me feel 30 years younger and then went back in the clouds," I'd be like, "Yeah, damn, God's real. He just came and talked to me." But then that wouldn't be faith, because like you had proof. So faith is choosing to believe in something that you don't have proof of because you want to. That's what faith is. And so anyway, not to get on a religious topic, but so I believe that if God came down and talked to us, he'd probably say that it's immoral to have an abortion at any point in the pregnancy. But he'd say it's immoral to commit adultery too, because we know that because it's in the Ten Commandments and we don't want that to be illegal. So we don't set the standard as biblical rules or religious teachings. We should pick a legal standard. And I believe the legal standard should be something like 16 weeks. And I believe that 70% of people think abortion should be legal to 16 weeks. I talked to many, many, many very, and I say conservative, I mean, everybody can say if you're not a pure, you know, if you're not against abortion, you're not a conservative. The great Justice Scalia said himself that the Constitution is mute on abortion. There's no right to abortion in the Constitution. And that's what the most recent Supreme Court ruling actually came about. And of course, Scalia, God rest his soul, he wasn't there to be for the decision, but that left it to the states. Because there is no constitutional right to an abortion, states can choose to outlaw it or choose to allow it, and that's how it is. And so I believe that based upon talking to people who are conservative in every other way, and again, some would say if you're not completely pro-life, they're not conservative, pro-gun, anti-woke, you know, pro-free market, everything. But they think that abortion should be legal to some point. Everybody I know thinks abortion should be legal. Everybody that I am friends with, communicate with, they're totally against late-term abortion. It's murder. Or partial birth abortion. I mean, baby's head comes out, shove a scissors into the back of their spine to kill them before they're completely born, then it's an abortion, even though just depravity. I mean, that's just savagery. Everybody I know is against that. But I'd say 3 out of 4 people I know think that abortion should be legal to something like 16 weeks. So, like, again, I say to Republicans, how many more elections do you want to lose? How many more of our rights do you want to flush down the tube with it because you refuse to pass a law legalizing abortion to, like, something like 16 weeks? Because once you do that, once you pass that law, again, it doesn't mean it's right, doesn't mean it's morally right, it just means it's legal. Once you pass that law, you turn it into a winning issue. And then you can put Democrats on blast, because Democrats want to legalize killing a baby that's halfway out of the mother's vagina, sticking a surgical scissors in the back of its neck, send a bill to Tony Evers' desk, legalizing abortion to 16 weeks. Tony Evers promised he'd veto it. And then great, then run the campaign commercials. Republicans tried four times to get a abortion to 16 weeks bill to Governor Evers' desk, and he vetoed it. I don't think he would veto it. I think if you get a bill to Governor Evers' desk to abortion legal to 16 weeks, he would have to pass it, I think. And then you take the abortion issue off the table. And then I've heard Republicans say, well, then what else are you going to give up? You're going to pass gun control bill? Nope. Because I don't think that there's any legal reason for gun control or any logical reason for gun control. But I do believe there should be a legal standard for abortion legal to 16 weeks for those who choose to. And again, then it's if you don't want it to have, if you think abortion is immoral, don't have one. After 16 weeks, yeah, then it's we'll start enforcing the ban. But that takes it off the table. And then we could actually finally start winning some elections again, perhaps, if we have free and fair elections. But Republicans won't do it. And again, I have to say, how many more elections are we going to lose? How many more of our rights are going to be down the tubes? How much further down off the, we're already off the cliff to tyranny. But I would say, I mean, we're hanging on the edge of the cliff where someone could throw us a lifeline. Someone like, 12 years of Republican president, four more of Trump and eight more of DeSantis. My dream. But there'll come a point when we'll be so far down the rabbit, so far over the cliff that you can't even throw a lifeline. You can never reel it back in. Maybe we're already at that point. I don't know. How much further are Republicans going to let us lose on abortion issue? And again, I think many Republicans think that, oh, most people are against abortion. No, from my experience, most people are, I know a lot of people that think abortion is wrong, but most people I know think it should be legal to something like 16 weeks. And these are very Republican solid people that have never voted for a Democrat in their life. And they believe that. And I think you want to blame loss on something. I mean, that's probably the biggest one. I mean, Democrats, every single election, that's the issue. Even this election shouldn't have been. Because if a legislator lost their bid because they were anti-abortion, that's legit because the legislature is the one who should set the law. It should the abortion decision in Wisconsin shouldn't be a judicial decision. It should be a legislative one. And so anybody who voted against Dan Kelly because they think that that's the way to get abortion legal, they're misguided. But again, dealing with an uninformed electorate, you know, it is what it is. But again, all that said, Republicans need to get whether it's going to be it's going to be an issue every single time. I think for Senate, probably not. Maybe that's the reason Ron Johnson won, because the abortion issue just wasn't an issue because the Supreme Court sent it back to the states. And that was enough reason for people to vote for Ron Johnson because there's a lot of probably conservative or freedom-minded Republican-ish leaning voters that aren't like solid Republicans that may have voted for Democrats because of the abortion issue. It's certainly an issue in the colleges. You know, young people, these boys, like the girls, if they get pregnant, they want the option of abortion. The boys, if they get a girl pregnant, they want the option of abortion. I mean, the Democrats are making hay on the college campuses with even these low turnout spring elections. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight was, okay, so here's a quick one. So my daughter goes to New Berlin West High School. She's a junior. She's prom was just this yesterday, Friday. So excuse me, 2 days ago, Friday. My daughter's on prom court. They were scheduled to have the pictures for prom, the official pictures for prom. And I'll explain that in a minute, how this official pictures comes out at Berner Botanical Gardens in Hales Corners, which Hales Corners borders New Berlin. It's right on the edge of New Berlin, southeast New Berlin. You get to Hales Corners, Berner Botanical Gardens. That's Whitnall Park. Beautiful area. It's in Milwaukee County, but it's about as far west of Milwaukee County as you can possibly get without being in Waukesha County. And so prom is on a Friday, which is odd. Prom's usually on a Saturday. On Wednesday of last week, the New Berlin West student government Instagram page announces that the photo location was changed to the downtown Milwaukee Public Library. Don't get me wrong, downtown Milwaukee Public Library is a beautiful building, but it's Milwaukee. I think the people listening to this show probably pay enough attention to news. Milwaukee is a cesspool of crime, and it's not just out in the neighborhoods. I worked downtown for 15 years, and I would have said downtown's relatively safe. I mean, late Friday nights after midnight. I mean, even going back to 2003, there was an awesome festival called River Splash. It kind of was like Memorial Day weekend, kicked off the summer, closed down Water Street, put some stages at the one end of Water Street and the other end of Water Street, and parked some semi-truck trailers full of kegs of beer. It was a great party. I used to take my boat up to it, and it was fun. And then one year there was a shooting, and all of a sudden, no more River Splash. But that was pretty rare. And again, late at night, partying, whatever. Otherwise, crime was pretty non-existent downtown. There was very, very little crime in downtown Milwaukee. I'm talking, you know, Water Street you guys may or may not know the addresses, but, you know, the 1600 block of Water Street down to the Third Ward. It was a very safe area. That's not the case anymore. And it all changed in 2019. New Berlin West had their school pictures at the downtown public library. We had no problem with it. But now in 2023, it all changed in 2020. First COVID, then downtown turns into a ghost town. And then we had the George Floyd riots, and then everything went woke. And then the police defund the police. And that just, and then police being so maligned that police stopped taking risks and putting themselves out there because they didn't want to end up in jail or charged with a crime for just doing their job. And we could all argue there was police officers that overstepped their authority, and then sometimes where they didn't, and they were maligned even though they followed protocols. But if you watch the news, you'll see that even downtown Milwaukee, crime has exploded. I read the Business Journal, and the executives of companies say, yeah, it used to be that during the workday, downtown, very, very, very safe. Not anymore. As people started returning to the office from COVID and after the George Floyd riots and the lawlessness that ushered in, employers across downtown from Milwaukee Electric Tool, Northwestern Mutual Life, I think even some other businesses that are up near Cathedral Square, the CEOs have said, yeah, we've all had employees be assaulted during the day, you know, whether going to lunch, coming and going from work during the middle of the day, which was unheard of in the past. I read the Business Journal, so I know this stuff. They've had roundtables recently of CEOs and stuff. So downtown, even downtown Milwaukee is a cesspool of crime. The reckless driving, it's not just out in the neighborhoods. It's not just 60th and Capitol. It's even downtown. 10th and Wells last year, some reckless driver flying through red lights kills a pastor who's going to his church in the middle of the morning. And that guy was just sentenced to prison 12 years, like Wednesday, I believe it was, Thursday. So you park a Kia anywhere in Milwaukee, you leave it for more than an hour, it's better than 50-50 chance it'll be gone. We went to, and we still spent time in downtown Milwaukee. I mean, not this last Saturday, but this weekend, not yesterday, but the weekend before, we took a hike at Coller Andre State Park, and then we drove back down, and coming down 43, we come through Milwaukee. We went to Lakeshore, walked around Lakeshore State Park, ate dinner at the Twisted Fisherman. But you know what? When we parked at Lakeshore State Park back behind the, I call it the Marcus Amphitheater. I think now it's the American Family Amphitheater. When we parked there along the, there's some parking back there so that you can access Lakeshore State Park. Every Kia that I saw had a club on the steering wheel, because even there, people know your car is going to get stolen if it's a Kia. So now they want to move New Berlin West's prom pictures to downtown Milwaukee, 3 p.m. on a Friday. And I was like, hell no. Who the hell made this decision? So we're going to call the school. So we call the school Thursday morning. My fiance calls first and ends up talking to the athletic director. I'll explain why that is in a minute. The athletic director says, well, the students made up this decision and we don't have any input in it. So it's actually the student government, which is sanctioned by the school. It's called SALU, S-A-L-U, Student Association Leadership. I don't know what the acronym fully stands for, but it's the student government, which the school sanctions. Supposedly they're the ones that decide where the official prom photos are going to be. And I said, is there an adult in the room? I mean, is there any faculty oversight over the student government? Because someone should have said, hey, this is a really bad idea. So what you're talking about here is, now it's a Friday afternoon and it's 2 days notice. So many people, like, we were going to let our daughter drive herself to Hales Corners, to Whitnall Park, with her own car. And then we were going to go take our pictures, leave, then she can take her pictures with her friends and everything. We're not letting her drive to downtown Milwaukee by herself. Hell no. And she's on prom court, so it's not like, oh, Julia, you can't go. And so in spite of what we think is just a horrible decision, this is, again, there's prom is junior prom. That's a lot of 17-year-olds. You're sending unaccompanied, many of them unaccompanied. Now, some parents do go with, but if there's, you know, 200 kids going to prom, not everybody's parents can go. A lot of them are probably saying, hey, head on down to Hales Corners and take your pictures. And all of a sudden it's downtown. Sending dozens to 100 unaccompanied minors downtown is a terrible idea. This is libraries on 9th in Wisconsin on like 20-something in Wisconsin. There was that limo bus shot up leaving a Morgan Wallen concert the Saturday before, not even a week prior. Milwaukee's just a cesspool of crime, and it's the reckless driving. Reckless driving is all over Milwaukee, even downtown. These kids from New Berlin, look, they don't know. In New Berlin, you're crossing the road. You hit the walk sign. You get the walk signal. Boom, you walk across the street. In downtown Milwaukee, you hit the sign. You get the walk signal. You look both ways while you're walking across the street because people don't care about red lights down there and they'll blow up. So again, through no fault of their own, kids from New Berlin don't know. You know, they don't have the city street smarts. A lot of kids from New Berlin drive Kias. My daughter does. My daughter, Julia, I bought her a 2022 RDX, so she's got a brand new Acura RDX, but we weren't letting her drive that downtown. I don't want that to get stolen, broken into. And it's not just, so the Kias they can steal and break into just by using like a USB drive to jimmy it, to override some circuit. The nice cars like Audis and Acuras, they steal those. They love stealing SUVs. They have a programmer. They can go up next to your car and they can reprogram your key setting. I think I was reading about this. It's like $1,600. You can buy this reprogrammer. They can pull up next. So there's two kinds of car theft. There's the Kia boys that they'll steal a Kia, break the window, use a USB cord, rip the steering column apart, jam it in a certain place, and boom, all of a sudden the car is running. And then they usually reckless drive those and crash them and then run on, find another one. But then there's the luxury SUV market where they steal those by reprogramming the thing. So we're not letting our daughter take her brand new Acura RDX down there. I don't want my fiance taking her brand new Acura MDX Type S. I mean, it's an $85,000 car. I don't want her taking that down there. So just a horrible decision. But so here's what's most shocking. So then I make a stink about it. I put a post on Nextdoor because I'm banned from Fascist Book. Put a post on Nextdoor. You would not believe the vitriol expressed towards me. Oh, there's nothing to worry about. They'll be fine. Downtown's fine. It's 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Like, I'm like, holy fuck, do people watch the news? Like, seriously? I thought it was just common knowledge how bad. And again, I'm no suburban fool. I worked downtown for 15 years. And I know, even from talking to people, that it's gotten exponentially worse since 2020, since COVID and the George Floyd riots, since COVID turned downtown into a ghost town, then the George Floyd riots turned policing into a spectator sport, and crime downtown has skyrocketed. Now, do I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that, you know, someone's going to be a victim of crime? No, I'd say it's I'm totally guessing. I mean, maybe it's a 15% chance that of the 100 students, someone would be a victim of crime. It's still not the most likely outcome. Most likely nothing's going to happen. But I'd say in Hale's Corners, there's like a 0.5% chance of someone being a victim of a crime. Is it so worth going to the Milwaukee downtown library for pictures that you want to take that extra risk with unaccompanied 17-year-olds? My answer is hell no. But I respect, look, if other people have a different risk tolerance, they're like, oh, I'll send my 17-year-old. Well, I mean, you're playing the odds. I mean, look, I ride a motorcycle without a helmet, playing the odds. Is it unsafe? But if you ask me, Nick, is it safe to ride a motorcycle without a helmet? I'd say, well, certainly not if you crash. You're way more likely to live with a helmet on. Is it dangerous to ride a motorcycle without a helmet? Yeah, it's dangerous. Way more dangerous than riding a motorcycle with a helmet. I'm not going to deny it's dangerous. But you got these people denying that it's unsafe to send kids downtown. And then it gets picked up by, I own the New Berlin Taxpayers Alliance webpage, make a post on there. It gets picked up by Reddit forums. I called the Waukesha Freeman, gave them the news tip and said, hey, they did a story on it. That gets picked up by Reddit forums. These people from downtown Milwaukee that are all butthurt because I threw shade and criticized their crime problem in the city. Oh, Milwaukee's safer than Waukesha. Give me a break. You can park a Kia in Waukesha for 3 days on end on the street, and it's going to be there when you come out. You park a Kia for 3 hours in Milwaukee, and it's a better than 50-50 chance it's gone. In fact, probably close to a 75% chance it's gone. So don't give me this shit, Milwaukee's more safe than Waukesha. But that's what these idiots are saying. But you wouldn't believe the vitriol sent my way. Oh, first I was called racist with one lady. Your racism is showing. You might want to tuck that back in. Another person, New Berlin Nancy, Suburban Sally. I mean, I'm like, is this bizarro world? The people, again, do they not watch the news? Are they just that? And again, it blew my mind. But what was equally astonishing was then CBS 58 wants to do a story about it because they read about it in the Freeman. They came and did a story. And so they're like, oh, yeah. Now, CBS 58 does stories daily about the reckless driving. These reporters have to know Milwaukee is a cesspool of crime. Now, cesspool is a subjective judgment. Milwaukee reporters have to know that there's a rampant increase in crime downtown Milwaukee since 2020 and to today. It's notable. The murder rate in Milwaukee has skyrocketed. Now, the murder rate not necessarily happens downtown, but the reckless driving has skyrocketed in the past several years, and that's downtown as well. The car thefts, and that's all over the city, including downtown as well. So these reporters have to know that, 100% have to know it. Michelle Fiore comes and does an interview, interviews me. I said, yeah, well, we're concerned for the safety of the kids, unaccompanied minors going down there, whatever. I mean, it's not necessarily they're going to get murdered, but reckless driving, I mean, cars, vehicle theft, vehicle break-ins, that type of thing. I don't want my daughter in high heels, which she doesn't usually walk in, walking across the street when a reckless driver comes around and she can't even jump out of the way because she's wearing high heels. I mean, so Michelle Fiore, oh, yeah, you raise good points. And then she goes and does her story, and she mentions that we were concerned about, like, reckless driving and stuff. And then she says, you know, there's been a couple instances of crime recently, one on 35th, but that's 20 blocks away, and one three blocks away, but both of those were at night. Like, she basically, like, undercut in her B-roll, in the reporter's narration over the story, basically discredited my, you know, which shouldn't be the job of the reporter. If the reporter is being honest, they'd say, you know, these concerns from suburbanites come after executives of companies downtown have themselves said that their employees don't feel safe. That's on the record. The CEO of We Energies, Clappa, I forget his first name, Gail, that's Gail Clappa. He said, he said his female employees, he said, my female employees do not feel safe coming and going from the office. That's not Nick, the New Berlin Nancy, saying it. That's the CEO of We Energy saying it, his employees. Then you got the Milwaukee Electric Tool, the CEO from Milwaukee Electric Tool, which has a new big headquarters, not headquarters, a new big facility downtown. And he said, yeah, our employees are worried for their safety. We've had to increase spending on security. We've had to increase spending. We had to even change the gates on our parking garage so that they close quicker, so that no one, when a car pulls out, no one can dart in before the gates close. We've sped that up. So then this is me making up this, and these reporters should know all this stuff. Yet now the reporter is going to make it seem like, oh no, this is unfounded. And here's what I realized is it's one thing for them to talk about the crime for the purposes of driving more funding, getting more funding for the Office of Violence Prevention, pushing the narrative that we need gun control. I mean, there's reasons that they'll talk about and report on crime. But when someone actually expresses then a concern over this crime that is happening, and they've reported on themselves, well, then I become the bad guy. I'm the terrible person. It took me a day to realize, you know what, when you really start taking incoming, it means you're over the target. And that's what it was. Milwaukee knows it's got a crime problem. They know. Look, you go to a Bucks game, a typical Bucks game, there was like a parking garage nearby, 30-some cars got broken into. And that's kind of like turning into per Bucks game. And this denial that, oh, people, I mean, and they've even said it at the roundtables, people are going to start not stop coming downtown. But now when someone actually expresses that they don't want to come downtown, then they're all up in arms. They're all bent. Because someone actually told the truth. Downtown's not safe. / not worth the risk. And then I'm like, why are they so unwilling to tell this, to be honest? And then I realized, because to be honest about it, and to be honest about the solutions, would mean, look, a lot of the crime, and they'll say disproportionately disproportionate amount of incarceration for black people. But the solution, throwing people more in jail, would offend black leaders in Milwaukee. And so I'm sitting here in the shower today. I'm thinking, you know, why is no one willing? Why does the black or issues from the quote black community trump everything? Why does, you know, Chris Abele got carjacked in his BMW sedan. And you know what he said? He didn't say, oh, crime's out of control. We need to crack down on these criminals. Chris Abele said, I can't imagine the hardship that a young person must have gone through their whole life to feel, to be in a position to have to steal a car from someone. That's what Chris Abele said after his car was carjacked and a bullet shot into it. Unwilling, even as a victim of crime, unwilling to criticize, call for punishments against these urban youth who are doing this stuff. And I sat there and I said to myself, why? Like, what? Why would, and then I realized why issues that, quote, black leaders embrace are religiously defended, adopted, accommodated by all politicians, white or black, who are Democrats. And the reason is because Democrats cannot win without the black vote. They can't. All these major cities, look, if the Democrats were to make the black community mad by starting to incarcerate people who commit crimes in the inner city, or in Milwaukee, not even the inner city, but downtown, wherever, if they started throwing a bunch of people who happen to be black in jail, these community leaders would be furious. They're not going to work their community activism for Democrat candidates. They're not going to, I mean, there is such a machine made up of black residents, black activists, black community leaders, black even city employees, that Democrats can't piss off. And I don't even think, because you go out to the neighborhoods, I've seen TV interviews like the Kia Boys interview, and they interviewed the Kia Boys documentary. They interviewed people in the neighborhoods and said, hey, what should we do about this carjacking stuff. They're like, throw those thugs in jail, throw those thugs in jail. I mean, so there's people in the black community who want to see these thugs thrown in jail, but not the leaders of the black community. No, they think it's unfair and it's, you know, socioeconomic driven and it's disparate impact and racism is the root of this and that incarceration isn't the key. And Democrats know that they can't win without the black vote and they can't get the black vote without the black leaders. And so that's why black leaders end up dictating the issues, dictating the quote solutions, which are not solutions. So yeah, all they want is more money for the Office of Violence Prevention so they can throw that out and have another conduit. You know, it was public schools have turned into just a conduit to get taxpayer money into the hands of inner city people. And now the police departments, you know, shifting money from those to the Office of Violence Prevention. That's just another, now for law enforcement purposes, now they can shift law enforcement dollars into these offices that are just going to shovel money into the, not, they're not doing anything to stop crime. They're shoveling money into the inner city for more programs. A friend of mine drives truck, delivers to McDonald's. And so he's stocking these places like sometimes 4:30 in the morning. He's doing his route. And his route takes him into Milwaukee. He said last year one time it was 4:30 in the morning and some kid, a week ago, he was delivering his stuff and some woman jumps out of a car, runs towards him. She'd been shot in the leg, pulls her pants down, says, "Look, I've been shot." She's bleeding all over. So, you know, he calls the police. But he said that, I don't know if it was a month before or late last year, he was unloading at one of these McDonald's and some kid throws a brick through his truck. There was a brick through the cab of his truck. And I said to him, I said, "Hey," this was like, again, early in the morning, like 4:30 in the morning. I said, "Do you know why that kid threw a brick through your truck?" And he said, "Why?" I said, "Because there's not enough after school programs." I mean, that's what the solution is for everything, right? Oh, we need more activities for these students, these black youth. There's not enough activities for them in the city. And so, yeah, I joked, yeah, that's why at 4:30 a.m. why a brick got thrown through his cab, because there's not enough after school programs for black youth in Milwaukee. But yeah, it's just so, I mean, I was thinking about writing an editorial and seeing it first, the Freeman would probably publish it. I don't know if the Journal Sentinel would publish it, but I was going to say, "Dear MKE, dear Milwaukee, this is the canary speaking. You know, these suburban people that now no longer want to come downtown, this is the canary in the coal mine. When we're not coming downtown, that's your indication that there's a bunch of toxic stuff built up downtown and it's going to explode pretty soon. And so it would be wise of you guys, instead of being in denial and, oh, it's not here, you know, these people, 30 to 50 per night that go to a Bucks game and get their car broken into, do you think they're more or less likely to come back to Milwaukee after having gotten their car broken into? I would say they're less likely to go to another Bucks game. And not all. I mean, if 50 people per night, some of those will say, "Oh, yeah, it sucks, but I'm still going to Bucks games." But a number of them, I think, will be like, "You know what? Fuck it. I'm watching on TV. I'm not going downtown. I don't want to get my car broken into again." Downtown, you got the new Warner Grand Theater. The Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra now has its own home. And instead of having to use the Marcus Center, you got the Rep Theater. You think any of the retired, wealthy, affluent people in the suburbs who are retired and like to go downtown and watch shows, watch a musical, watch a play, do you think they're more or less likely to go downtown given all the crime that's happening downtown? And, you know, if they, I mean, again, I would say certainly less likely to go downtown. And so, I mean, I think you're going to see a big impact. They don't do something, and they're not going to. I mean, you see what's happening in Chicago on Michigan Avenue, which would have formerly been like a very safe place. And now Michigan Avenue is a place where people are getting shot and murdered. And I mean, it's insanity. And that's where Milwaukee's going. Milwaukee's not going to magically change directions. And I'm rooting for Milwaukee because I'm in the real estate business. I have clients in Milwaukee. lots of clients in Milwaukee. A lot of my clients are high-rises, high-rise condos, loft condos. Those are clients of mine. I want Milwaukee to do well. I need Milwaukee to do well. I have a boat that I keep in Milwaukee. We spend a lot of time Lakeshore State Park, up and down the river. So I'm rooting for Milwaukee. I don't want to see Milwaukee go down the shitter. I don't want to see Milwaukee turn into Chicago. But if they don't take action, it's going to, and it's going to get worse. It will get worse. People aren't going to want to come to Summerfest. I predict, this is my also, take this prediction to the bank. I predict Summerfest is, its best years are behind it, at least for a long period of time until there's some major change, which would involve both first addressing the crime issue in Milwaukee, and second, there's all kinds of people retiring, like longtime executives from Summerfest, like Bob Babish, who's been like the talent director for like 30 years or something. He retired. I mean, I predict that these millennials that are taking over some of these positions, they're going to just continue to F up Summerfest. And I, again, that's my prediction, that Summerfest is just going to be on the downward trend. After COVID, it took a huge hit. And then they had it in the fall and the weekend thing, and they didn't do very well. Last year was the first time it was back during the summer, but on that, just the weekends only format for like 3 weekends. And then someone was like, this guy who was giving me crap, he's like, oh, Summerfest attendance was up 8% last year. I'm like, yeah, 8% from a record low the year before. Summerfest is way, 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 way down in attendance from its heyday, pre-pandemic levels. And people aren't going to go back. You know, even and you'll still pack it on a Friday night with young people. But the daytime crowds where you could get, you know, 100,000 people there, 50,000 people during the day on a nice Sunday afternoon, nice Friday afternoon, those people aren't coming back. They're staying away. You're still going to pack it from, you know, 6, 7 o'clock on a Friday night. Yeah, you'll pack it from there till close with young people where it's packed wall to wall. You know, Miller Oasis is just a log jam. But you're not going to pack it. You're not going to pack it for... Oh, shoot, my live feed is running out here, so I don't know if we have any live listeners, but thanks for tuning in. Have a great week and carry on. And then, you know, I'm going to wrap up the entire show here real quick here. The one last topic I was going to mention tonight was, you know, have you guys noticed, I said this going back a couple of years, I said, look, people think we're winning on the gun issue because concealed carry is legalized everywhere and constitutional carry is sweeping the country. And, but trust me, we're not winning. And so, you know, carry is legal, but it doesn't matter if it's legal to carry, if it's going to be too fraught with danger to actually use your gun in self-defense. The reason we carry a gun is for self-defense. But now if you actually end up using your gun in self-defense, look what happened. I mean, look at Kyle Rittenhouse, look at George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, to some recent cases. Daniel Perry, this is down in Texas. His car got surrounded by a bunch of BLM protesters. He ended up in the middle of a riot. And then someone approaches his car and supposedly, allegedly points a rifle at this Uber driver, this delivery driver. And the delivery driver pulls his gun and shoots the guy and kills him. He was just convicted. This is Daniel Perry down in Texas. Now, this guy, Daniel Perry, made some statements on social media like, might have to kill some protesters today. I mean, and I've said this before, machismo has zero survival value. Your we don't dial 911 sticker on your front door, that's not going to help you with anything. You're, you know, it just bragging on social media, bragging on Facebook about, you know, rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. I mean, you're going to end up being judged by 12. You know, there's some people that just, oh yeah, someone tries that around me and he's going to have a bullet in his head. I mean, just, you know, this bravado on social media or whatever. I mean, it's going to come back to haunt you. It doesn't do you any good if you ever end up actually having to use your gun. So if you ever want to be able to use your gun and be judged legal in doing so for self-defense, my advice would be to watch your chest thumping online. Because again, it doesn't matter if you're legal to carry your gun, because if the left succeeds in making it prosecution by persecution, when you use your gun, as in Kyle Rittenhouse, look, he was justified, but he should never have been charged. But they charged him and ran him through. Now, at the end of the day, he probably is coming out ahead of the game because he's a famous public figure and had a lot of opportunities open up for him because of it. But there's this guy out. It's called the TikTok video case. This was out like somewhere out east. I forget where it was, but I forget the name of the kid. I want to say it was Nathaniel something. Anyway, this kid was making TikTok videos in his neighborhood, driving through the neighborhood and then pissing off neighbors. And then they'd come out and yell at him and he'd make videos of them and call them Karens and stuff. And then they would call the police, but apparently what he was doing wasn't enough for the police to make any arrests or issue any traffic citations. Well, then this family or couple families that didn't appreciate this kid in the neighborhood, they go up to his house, show up at his house, park in front. The kid's in his own house, in his own driveway. They start coming up the driveway, threatening him. They're going to beat his ass. And then they lunge at him. And then he swings at them. He's got a knife. He swings at them, ends up stabbing one of the guys to death. And they charged him with, I don't know if it was with murder or with second degree murder or something like that. But and fortunately, last week, he was just found not guilty. Because I saw that it's all on video. Because this family was making a video as their brothers or whatever came up this guy's neighbor or this guy's driveway to beat him up. But so it was all on video, and it sure looked like self-defense to me. They lunged at the guy. The guy was kind of retreating up his driveway, and these guys who were on his property came to beat him up for his videos that they didn't like that he was posting to TikTok. And they lunged at him, and he took a knife to him, and one of them died. And he was judged to be not guilty, that he acted in self-defense. So that was a good outcome. But the left is going to continue to, and they were white. His attackers were white. Just can you imagine if his attackers were black? Can you imagine? I mean, I pray I never have to use my gun in self-defense, but I double pray I never have to use my gun in self-defense against a person of color, because the scrutiny on you is going to be 100 times worse if you have to shoot a person of color. I mean, it's bad enough, Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, he shot three white dudes, killed two of them. Can you imagine if one of them had been black? I mean, that's where it is right now. Carry is legal. That ship has sailed. It's not unsailing. Shall issue is basically the law of the land. Of course, you got places like Chicago and New York where it's practically impossible to feasibly carry. But don't judge the success or the victory of gun rights by concealed carry laws or constitutional carry. Judge it by what happens in the courts. Judge it by if someone uses their gun in self-defense where there's clear-cut evidence, like video evidence, and they get charged, that's where we're going to lose. It's going to be prosecution, persecution. Even if they can't get a conviction, or hope that they will. The next stage is to make self-defense illegal. They didn't succeed in making carry illegal. Carry is legal. Again, that ship has sailed. That train's rolling down the tracks. But they want to make self-defense illegal to the point that why even bother to carry? Because if you do and you use your gun in self-defense, which is the only reason you'd be carrying is to potentially use your gun in self-defense, you're the one who's going to be suffering the consequences. You're the one who's going to be facing jail time. You're the one who's going to be looking at spending a whole bunch of money on an attorney or having your life ruined, raked through the coals, losing your job, you know, you name it. So anyway, that's the show for this week. One of my good friends, Phil, pointed out that I hadn't done a show in over a month, so here it is. Hope it was a good one. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you guys are doing well. Just a quick update. So Wisconsin Carry, we were planning to try to have the annual meeting April 30th, but I have not been able to get a hold of the printer who prints our annual mailing. So the annual mailing hasn't gone out. Can't have the annual meeting if the annual mailing hasn't gone out. So that's probably going to need to get delayed. Not probably, it's certainly going to need to get delayed. So stay tuned. We were originally planning to do is the annual meeting is going to be by Zoom this year. We want to try to find a way for more. I mean, the in-person meeting we sometimes get. I mean, the best we ever did was probably 250 people when we had it at the Dry Bean in Fitchburg in 2011, when we were on the cusp of having concealed carry passed and everybody was real interested. But otherwise, I mean, you know, last year I don't know if we had a couple dozen. I mean, it was less than 50 people show up for the annual meeting, and we'd like something where more people can get engaged. And, you know, and I get it. I mean, who wants to drive, you know, halfway across the state to go to an annual meeting for an hour and then drive back? So stay tuned. But we do plan to have the annual meeting by Zoom, so hopefully a lot more people can join in. You guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?